The United Nations has suspended aid convoys in Syria the day after an airstrike hit some of its trucks near the rebel-held city of Aleppo. At least one aid worker and around 20 civilians were killed in the attack, and delivery of more relief will be stopped while the UN assesses the security situation. Both Russia and Syria have denied any involvement in the attack. In his final address at the UN General Assembly, U.S. President Barack Obama called for a global course correction, saying strife and unease are troubling the world's citizens. He said nations need to work together to halt climate change and nuclear proliferation. Mr. Obama also called for greater steps to be taken to help refugees.
Ultimately, our world will be more secure if we are prepared to help those in need and the nations who are carrying the largest burden with respect to accommodating these refugees.
The father of New York bombing suspect Ahmad Khan Rahami says he called FBI agents and told them his son was a terrorist back in 2014. Mohammed Rahami says the FBI did not find his son a threat. Ahmad Rahami was arrested Monday following a gunfight with police. William Denzelow reports from New York.
U.S. media are reporting that Ahmad Khan Rahami had visited Pakistan and his native Afghanistan multiple times, and police are now looking into whether he could have been radicalized during these trips. Rahami is accused of planting devices in New Jersey and New York and is being charged on 5 counts of attempted murder after a blast wounded 29 people in Manhattan's Chelsea neighborhood. Citing a law enforcement source, CNN say Rahami's wife left the country days before the bombing. After the shootout with police, Rahami is in a stable but critical condition, and officials say there's no information regarding a potential motive.
Actress and humanitarian Angelina Jolie has filed for divorce from her husband, Brad Pitt. Irreconcilable differences have been cited for the split, and she has asked for physical custody of the couple's 6 children. Frances Reed has more from Los Angeles.
The Hollywood actress filed for divorce on Monday, listing they'd only separated a few days ago. For more than a decade, Brad and Angelina were the golden couple, 2 actors at the peak of their professions. They met on the set of Mr. and Mrs. Smith in 2005. At the time, Pitt had been married to Friends star Jennifer Aniston, whom he later divorced, and Jolie had been divorced twice before. Brad and Angelina went on to have 6 children together, 3 of whom they adopted. The couple married only 2 years ago. They'd kept a low profile recently. The split comes only a few months after the pair released their film By the Sea about an unhappily married couple. Frances Reed, Los Angeles.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Ah, Rebecca Foster, we won't get any Mr. and Mrs. Smith part 2. God damn it. So, Brad, why did you fall out of love with Angelina? Well, she kept adopting poor people's children rather than helping those poor people to keep their children. That's what she was doing. That might be a bit unfair. Welcome to the programme, by the way. Tuesday, September 20th, 2016. My name is Richie Allen. How are you?
Broadcasting live from the great city of Manchester, England. This is the Richie Allen Show on DavidIke.com. The Richie Allen Show, brought to you in association with DavidIke.com. And now, live from Manchester, England, here is Richie Allen.
Coming up this hour, Paul Craig Roberts, the former U.S. Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. Great guy, regular guest on this program. Lots to talk about with Paul. A lot of really interesting articles on paulcraigroberts.org about Russia, Syria, the United States, and more besides Paul Craig Roberts this hour. Mark Bajerski, top man, great friend of ours, is back on the program tonight, live from the Costa del Sol. Mark is an international healer, an author, and mystic. Really, really top man is Mark. Check out markbajerski.com, spelled B-A-J-E-R-S-K-I. Mark joins me in the second hour. We're going to get into some really interesting things in the second hour. And as always, you can participate by tweeting at Richie Allen Show. Email Richie at richieallen.co.uk. Talk to me. Welcome to the programme. You'd swear I'd practiced it, wouldn't you? That's all I do all day, practice the intro. Great to be with you. It's Tuesday. The nights are getting longer already. We're only in September. Want to say a big hi to Colin Houlden. Lovely man. Emails me regularly with really interesting things, does Colin. And he's in Galicia at the moment in Spain. Colin, how are you? Hope all is well with you. Thanks for staying in touch with me. Sent me some interesting information on fluoride yesterday, which I'm going to get into in the programme next week. How you doing, Colin? We're live on alternatecurrentradio.com. Of course, check it out. FabRadioInternational.com in Manchester. DavidIke.com. He's in San Francisco this coming Saturday. Check out the WorldWideWakeUp.com. Not many tickets left, but good seats are still available. Go and see David. Spend 10 hours, 11 hours with him. It's going to blow your mind. Mentioned last night, Jeffrey Jackson was in touch. He saw David in Los Angeles last weekend. Check that out. I want to say happy birthday to Julia Wright. Happy birthday, Julia. Julia paid just over £200 for some beautiful healing materials from Mark Bajerski last week, which was donated to this programme. Wonderful thing. Coincided with the second birthday of the programme. But Julia's been listening for a long time. Happy birthday, kid. Hope you've had a good day and all is well with you. Now, Lou emailed me. Lou listens regularly and tweets regularly and takes part in discussions on Twitter. And she emailed me, and I'll just synopsize this quickly. She said, Richie, I heard you mention last night that you were using drugs for acid reflux. I thought I'd mention I quit all aspartame at the start of this year and got rid of a lot of heart-related issues by doing it. Palpitations, irregular heartbeat, etc. I did it off my own back in my own research. My GP shrugged her shoulders at the cause. Now, until last night, I didn't know that I also needed to stop omeprazole, as they also gave me the same symptoms. Since the year began, I've been using a natural product called Acid Ease by Enzymatic Therapy. Enzymatic Therapy. I can't recommend it enough, says Lou. It was more effective for me for my reflux than anything else. I don't need to use it daily. It coats the digestive tract to protect it, so it works as a preventative as well. The ingredients are slippery elm bark and marshmallow root, if anybody wants to buy the raw ingredients and make their own if you've got acid reflux. Thanks, Lou, for that. We've passed that on, and I do hope your mum will be better soon. You told me she hasn't been well lately. So the United Nations has suspended all aid convoys in Syria after what it says was a devastating attack on its lorries near Aleppo yesterday. The strikes, which the BBC says came from the air, came hours after Syria declared a week-old US-Russia brokered cessation of hostilities at an end. We talked about this yesterday. Syrian army said ceasefire is over. The UN wants us to believe now, as does the US, that the Syrians bombed an aid convoy. Russia and Syria have both insisted their forces were not involved, but Ban Ki-moon, the UN chief, launched a stinging attack on the Syrian government, saying that it had killed the most civilians in the so-called civil war.
Many groups have killed many innocents, but none more so than the government of Syria, which continues to barrel bomb neighborhoods and systematically torture thousands of detainees. Just when we think it cannot get any worse, the bar of depravity sinks lower. Yesterday's a sickening, savage, and apparently deliberate attack on a UN Syrian Arab Red Crescent aid convoy is the latest example. The United Nations has been forced to suspend aid convoys as a result of this outrage.
So we're supposed to believe, as I mentioned today, that the Syrians are stupid people. The Assad government, well, they're basically idiots. After the United States had targeted their soldiers, which gave them the moral high ground, we're supposed to believe the Assad government authorised the blowing up of an aid convoy. What a load of monumental bollocks. Where are they getting it from? Well, I don't know this for a fact, but I guess they're getting it from Rami Abdul Rahman, the Coventry-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. It's ordinarily where they get their nonsense about Syria. Nonsense. Today, US even Secretary of State John Kerry insisted the ceasefire deal wasn't dead, following talks on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly. What a pathological bunch of liars they are. But I'm not going to steal Paul Craig Roberts' thunder. Thunder even, he joins me in a few minutes to talk more about this. So what's the latest on Ahmad Khan Rahami? He's the guy supposed to have set off the bombs in New York and New Jersey. Well, unsurprisingly, and we're going to start singing Morrissey again. Stop me, oh, stop me. If you think you've heard this one before. Because all of his friends and family say he's one of the nicest guys you could ever meet. He was friendly, he was quiet, he was great behind the counter of the restaurant belonging to his family. He liked talking about cars and he was generous with free food. He was good to people who were down on their luck. He was a nice guy. Now, he was apprehended yesterday, as you know, as the lead person of interest in the bombings. Everybody is expressing shock. How could this be? We know the guy. He's lovely. He was taken into custody yesterday. Wait for it. You'll know this by now, but maybe one or two of you won't. After he was discovered asleep in a bar doorway in New Jersey. What a fuckwit if that is true. But of course it doesn't add up really, does it? He's learned how to make, what are they called, pressure cooker bombs. He's taken a big interest in extremism. He was interested in the Boston Marathon bombers. This is a serious terrorist, but he fell asleep in a fucking bar doorway. The barman then found him and said Ahmad was apologetic for being in the doorway. Our terrorist went, "Jesus, I'm sorry I fell asleep in your doorway there." The barman said he looked a bit knackered as well. What a criminal genius, eh? He's going to place bombs at several locations and fall asleep in the door of a bar. Oh, yeah. And then we learned, of course, that a note was found in a plastic bag. A bag which was covering one of the devices, and the note mentioned a number of terrorist events which inspired young Ahmad Khan Rahami. Left a note and everything. How convenient, eh? Eh? I'm leaving that there, I can't be arsed. Nicolas Sarkozy, we're moving along swiftly here. Nicolas Sarkozy, well, I suppose, when it comes to Rothschild Zionism, this guy is, well, he's top of the class. He fancies a run at the French presidency again. Why not? He's a criminal. It's where they belong. Now, Sarkozy has been talking about burkinis. Dirty bastard. All right, let's be serious. He's been talking about burkinis. He said migrants should live like the French. And burkinis are barbaric. Okay? I mentioned on Facebook today, because this was mentioned in The Independent and in The Telegraph 5 years ago, but it didn't get any mention anywhere else. Well, at least not any extensive coverage. It should be mentioned, and a lot of our listeners won't know, that back in 2007, Muammar Gaddafi gave Nicolas Sarkozy €50 million to help him win the French presidency, which was a loan, not a gift. It's really important. It was a loan. In return for a little bit of influence. A little bit of influence. A year later, after getting 50 million from Gaddafi, Sarkozy welcomed him to France and gave him full state honours. 50 million. Nobody was ever supposed to know about the 50 million. But we do know. We know now. And I'll talk in a second about nobody having more to gain than Sarkozy from the destruction of Libya and the death of Gaddafi. But in the meantime, here's Gaddafi's son, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi, speaking in 2011 about the money given to the French president, Sarkozy, from his father, Muammar Gaddafi. Listen,
Gaddafi's son was then asked, as France was the first country to recognise the National Council of the Revolution, what was his opinion of President Sarkozy? Sarkozy must first give back the money he took from Libya to finance his electoral campaign. We funded it, and we have all the details and are ready to reveal everything. The first thing we want this clown to do is to give the money back to the Libyan people. He was given assistance so that he could help them, but he's disappointed us. Give us back our money. We have all the bank details and documents for the transfer operations, and we'll make everything public soon.
What a sleazy, monkey-faced scumbag Sarkozy is. Now, Saif al-Islam Gaddafi was sentenced to death last year, you might remember this, but in absentia. He wasn't there at a trial. He wasn't at the trial. He might not know this, he might know that. Up until July of this year, he was being held in the Zintan region, but he was released. Now, I don't know where he is now, Saif Islam al-Gaddafi, because I'd love to get an interview with him. I would guess he's probably hiding in fear for his life. Nicolas Sarkozy, you might not remember, led the effort to have the no-fly zone enforced over Libya, and he led the carpet bombing of Tripoli by NATO planes. David Cameron was standing there holding his hand. What would Ironside say? What would Perry Mason say? He had motive, Your Honour. And more than one Western leader had an interest in Gaddafi being summarily executed and not standing trial. Because in a trial, of course, he would have had a lot of embarrassing things to say. What a mad world we live in. When these monumental criminals, mass murderers, and can you say larcenists? I think you can. Well, they get to stand for president. And I'm going to finish this segment with news today from Microsoft, which straight out of the pages of the books of David Icke. Microsoft has vowed to solve the problem of cancer. That's a direct quote. We will solve the problem of cancer within a decade using groundbreaking computer science to crack the code of diseased cells so those cells can be reprogrammed back into a healthy state. Did you hear that? How is Microsoft going to do that? Well, they're going to have a computer made from DNA. This is, of course, nanotechnology. And the computer will live inside cells and look for faults in bodily networks. And if the computer spots cancerous chances, it would reboot the system and clear out the diseased cells. And they're going to have the prototype of this ready sometime within the next 5 to 6 years. What could possibly go wrong? Mr. Allen, you're at a high risk of cancer. There's been a lot of cancer in your family. What we're going to do, my friend, is we're going to inject into you about 100,000 computers. And when they spot diseased cells, they're going to reprogram them. What could possibly go wrong in that scenario, I ask you?
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now. Broadcasting the information the mainstream media won't touch. This is the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIcke.com.
And the comment of the day goes to Gary Dugan. How you doing, Gary? Once Microsoft has finished fixing cancer, will they get around to fixing Windows 10? Yeah, I like that. Hi to Alpar Delemre. How you doing, Alpar? To Danny Warden. How you doing, Danny? Nice to know you're listening. to Faisal, to Trade Ninja, who finds I can't be arsed, an amusing turn of phrase, to Mark Hardy, to Amseli, to Tony, to Lou, and to everybody else who's tweeting. Geo tweets, Richie, would you please ask Mark Bajerski if he's got any words of wisdom for me, as I've had a few bad years of luck. Can I do anything mentally? Maybe. I think what Gio is asking to turn that around. We will, of course, put that to Mark, of course, in the second hour. Hi to Tommy B as well, to Rich Mortimer, to JP in Manchester. How you doing, JP? Nice to know you're on board. To Catherine Curtis as well. And Julie Wright, whom I mentioned earlier on, whose birthday it is today. Julia Wright, I should say, not Julie. Julia Wright is listening. Her birthday today. Happy birthday again, Julia. Right, 21 minutes past the hour. Don't forget, as I mentioned, Mark Bajerski joins me in hour two. Coming up in a couple of minutes, Paul Craig Roberts. We're broadcasting live on alternatecurrentradio.com, fabradiointernational.com. We're on the TuneIn app, my own website as well. And it's really good to be with you this Tuesday, September 20th, 2016. This is one of my favourite songs of all time. Of all time. At Richie Allen Show on Twitter, richie@richieallen.co.uk.
Rival, Mother Nature is a man. We've overstayed our welcome.
The Pale Mother Nature is a Man on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. I'm going to play that for Hugo Chambers Calvi, who's the son of my producer, Claire Calvi. Hugo is 6 years old today. Happy sixth birthday, Hugo. Good to know you're listening, my friend. I hope you've had a great day. I'm sure you have had. In fact, I saw one or two photographs on Facebook today. Looks like a good time has been and is being had by all. Happy birthday, Hugo. Now, I can't raise Paul Craig Roberts. He's due to be with me right about now. But I'm not able to raise him momentarily. I'll keep trying that. No need to panic. There might be a time difference issue, but we were clear about the time. We'll give him a few minutes anyway, and we'll see, does he eventually connect? And if he does, well, we'll chat with him. Lot to speak with Paul Craig Roberts about, not least that news that I mentioned at the beginning of the monologue, that the United Nations has basically suspended all aid convoys in Syria because of a devastating attack on UN lorries near Aleppo yesterday, which is being blamed on the Syrian government and Russia. Surprise, surprise. Mentioned earlier on, the United Nations General Secretary Ban Ki-moon launched an attack on the Syrian government, saying that the Syrian government, had killed the most civilians in the civil war. He said powerful patrons feeding the war machine have blood on their hands. Of course, he might have been talking about the United States, Britain and France and Israel, and we could be here all day long. A lot of talk by guests on this programme in recent weeks about the Syrian Civil Defence White Helmets and who funds this group, which appears to be, at least on the face of it, a benevolent group doing humanitarian work on the ground in Syria. But there's a lot of evidence to suggest that they're far from benevolent and that they're a pretty sinister bunch of people. Soros-backed, of course, where else? The BBC quoting White Helmet members, men, liberally today. No comment, of course, from the other side. That's not what, you know, journalism used to be. You get two sides of a story, you know. The United Nations and America says the Syrians blew up the convoy. Well, let's see what Bashar al-Assad has to say about that. They don't do that. Doesn't happen anymore. Doesn't work like that. So that's the way it is. You might have heard Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst, on this programme last night saying that the failure of the ceasefire has plunged US-Russian relations to maybe an all-time low and that we're in a new, more dangerous type of Cold War. If you missed that interview, it was broadcast yesterday and it's on our YouTube channel now, courtesy of Simon Stewart. A number of you asked me, was I going to get into what the Trumps were tweeting over the last couple of days in the wake of the bomb in New York and the exploded devices in New Jersey. Apparently Donald Trump Jr., whom I don't know very much about, but I'm led to believe that he was on The Apprentice with Donald Trump. He had a big part to play in that, and he works for Trump Incorporated or whatever. I don't know much about him. But he tweeted a picture of a bowl of Skittles yesterday. And along with the tweet, the tweet had a caption, and the caption said, "If I had a bowl of Skittles and I told you just three would kill you, would you take a handful? That's our Syrian refugee problem." Now, that meme was made by somebody else. He retweeted that and he said, "Let's end the politically correct agenda that doesn't put America first." And of course, it's made the news. And one or two of you have been asking me, do I plan to cover that? I suppose I'm covering it now. But what do you say about that? You know, this is the way it's done. This is the way politics is run and is handled and is managed in that country. There's no real debate about the issues that matter to the people. The massive unemployment there, the massive disparity in income between the top 1% and everybody else in the United States, the amount of people in America who have no health insurance whatsoever, no coverage, none. And if they get seriously sick, they're absolutely fucked. These are serious issues, jobs, but no. What they've done is, you see, those who pulled the strings of Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, is they have made a X Factor American pop idol type contest out of the presidency. And it's all about who can say the most outrageous thing about the other. Who's got the most followers on Twitter. All of that nonsense. But the issues are not discussed. You heard Gerald Celente talk about that on the programme last week. It's exactly 8:30. The area with the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Due to have Paul Craig Roberts. And I believe the great man is now standing by. And he's ready to take our call. It is exactly, as I said, 29.5 minutes to the top of the hour. If you're just joining the programme, you're welcome to it. Tweet at Richie Allen Show and email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Our first guest needs very little introduction to you. He's a great man. We love having him on the programme. He's busy these days, of course, with the election looming. He is a former US Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. He's become a brilliant journalist in recent years. He appears on RT, he's appeared on Press TV, many shows, and of course he writes articles on his website, paulcraigroberts.org. And I recommend you bookmark paulcraigroberts.org because there's always incredibly interesting, well-researched material on there. Let's welcome him back. Paul, welcome back to the programme. How are you?
Pleased to be with you again, Richie.
Well, thanks for doing it, because I don't patronise you when I say, you know, you're busy. I know how crazy it is, particularly with the General Assembly going on at the moment, particularly with Ban Ki-moon, Paul, saying today, and we're going to talk about some of the articles on your website in due course, but Ban Ki-moon has said we're suspending the convoy aid to Syria because the Syrians and those dastardly Russians blew up the convoy. Therefore, we've got to do that. The Syrians have killed more than anybody else has killed in the conflict over the last 5-6 years. Paul, how timely is this? How sceptical should we be about this so soon after the US were blamed for killing Syrian soldiers, that happening last Saturday? How do you read this?
You mean the allegation that Russia and Syria blew up the aid convoy?
Yeah, yesterday, yeah.
Yeah, no, this is made up. I'm certain it's made up. It's part of demonizing Russia. You see, the United States, or Washington, is determined to overthrow Assad and put Syria into the same kind of chaos that the United States put Iraq and Libya into. The purpose that Washington has is to destroy what were formerly independent states with independent foreign policies that did not follow Washington's orders. And the second part of Washington's intention is to create jihadism that can spread into Iran and into the Muslim provinces of the Russian Federation and China. So this is what Washington's scheme is. So whatever is reported by the Western media is whatever Washington wants them to report. There's no independent print or TV media in the United States or anywhere in the West. So if they say that Russia and Syria attacked the aid column, it's nonsense. I mean, why would they do that? There's no reason for them to do that. So it's part of the demonization. It's part of trying to build support for U.S. conflict with Russia and Syria. And I think that was the purpose of the U.S. assault on the Syrian army position. See, this was the first time that the U.S. had attacked Syrian forces. The U.S. was relying on jihadists to attack the Syrian forces. And so now the United States has itself directly attacked them. So I think the situation will deteriorate. The Russians have done their best to avoid conflict. They offer cooperation. in lieu of conflict, but the United States is inclined to conflict.
We were speaking yesterday with a former colleague of yours, Paul, Ray McGovern, the former CIA analyst. In fact, I was speaking off air with Ray, and Ray, you know, he has a lot of admiration for you and for what you do. And I'm thinking, I read your article today, which I've just tweeted, which is on your website, Will Russia Surrender? And Ray said to me yesterday, Paul, he said, Richie said, Putin has shown amazing restraint in the way he's handled, you know, the coup in Ukraine and everything that's happened since then. But Ray did kind of offer a note of caution, Paul. He said there are some very hardline nationalists in Russia that we should be very worried about, you know, maybe not now, maybe not this year or next year, but at some stage usurping Putin, because these guys wouldn't show as much restraint, and then you might be in serious trouble. He also went on to say, did Ray McGovern, that we're in a kind of a, you know, a new Cold War, but maybe something more dangerous and more unstable than anything before, to echo what you just said there. What do you think of that?
Well, I think the war we're in now is far more serious than the Cold War was. During my lifetime, every American president did the best they could to diffuse the tension between the United States and the Soviet Union. If you will remember, President John Kennedy worked with Khrushchev to diffuse the Cuban Missile Crisis, and part of the deal was that Kennedy took the American missiles out of Turkey. You may remember that President Nixon achieved the SALT I, Strategic Arms Limitations Treaty with Russia. He also achieved the Anti-ABM Treaty. If you remember, President Carter achieved the SALT II. President Reagan ended the Cold War with Gorbachev. All these presidents worked to get rid of the possibility of conflict between the nuclear powers. Now, since the Clinton regime, the presidents have worked to increase tensions. Clinton broke the promise that George Herbert Walker Bush had made to Gorbachev in exchange for Gorbachev's agreement for the reunification of Germany. President Bush said that the United States would not move NATO one inch to the east. Now, the president, George Herbert Walker Bush, kept that agreement, but when Clinton got in office, he took the former Warsaw Pact, the Eastern European countries, put them into NATO and took NATO right to the Russian border. And then when George W. Bush got in, he pulled out of the Anti-ABM Treaty and began the process of putting missile bases on Russia's border. You can see how much the tensions have worsened under Obama, who organized a coup in Ukraine, overthrew an elected government, stuck in an American puppet, started the conflict with the Russian provinces in eastern and southern Ukraine, and now has entered into the conflict in Syria directly in a way that is confrontational with Russia. So these are enormous risk, enormous provocations. It's behavior that is totally opposite all previous American administrations who throughout the Cold War worked to avoid any sort of tension. So I think this means either the Russians will have to say, well, we're going to have to go along with the Americans and kind of follow their lead, or there's going to be a thermonuclear war, or they're going to simply say, look, we tried to rely on diplomacy, We offered a cooperation. The Americans only rely on aggression and conflict, and so we have to be ready for war. So if they come to that conclusion, then what you are left with, once diplomacy is removed from the equation, and the Russians no longer rely on diplomacy because they see the United States has no interest in it whatsoever, then you have force confronting force.
You, your article is terrific, by the way. I talked a minute ago about hardline nationalists whom might seek to eventually get rid of Putin because they want to take a stronger line against the West. But in your article, Paul, which I have tweeted, and folks, it is on paulcraigroberts.org. On there are links to Paul's excellent books as well. But you write in your article, Paul, and it's absolutely fascinating. I'm going to quote it. Elements in the Russian government known as Atlanticist integrationists believe that it is more important for Russia to be part of the West and to be integrated into the Western system than to be a sovereign country. Paul, how prevalent are these Atlanticist integrationists? How much sway do they have right now?
Well, they have enough sway to keep causing the Putin government to make mistakes. For example, Putin caught the United States off guard when he entered the conflict in Syria at the request of the Syrian government and started the bombing raids against ISIS. This caught the Americans completely off guard. So they were on the verge, the Russians, of completely eliminating ISIS. And for some strange reason, they called it off and left. They said, we've achieved the objective and left. I think what happened was the Atlanticist integrationists, that is the American agents in the Russian government, said, look, you've done enough, and now we'll rely on the Americans to come to reason, and we'll negotiate the end of this. And they probably forced the withdrawal with the kinds of arguments that we have to continue our diplomatic efforts and seek cooperation with the Americans. So that's one example. And then, so they had to go back in. Well, by now, the United States had interjected itself. It had resupplied ISIS, resupplied the jihadist forces that Washington had sent to Syria in the first place, and also the situation in the skies over Syria when that was now more complicated because now Russia had to warn Washington before its bombing raids so there would not be any U.S. airplanes in the vicinity, you know, which could provoke some kind of a conflict. Well, when Russia has to warn Washington, Washington warns ISIS. It could well be that Washington warned Turkey, and that's how the Russians lost that plane. So it got more complicated. Now, this last ceasefire, again, the Russians are working to try to get cooperation, to have a diplomatic solution to this conflict. And so what do the Americans do? They attack the Syrian base. So now the Americans are entered directly into the conflict. That's a precedent. They can attack more Syrians. So the Atlanticist integrationists, in my opinion, by their interventions, have completely wrecked the success that the Russians had. The whole thing would be over with if Putin had never pulled out prematurely that first time. So I think they are influential because they are very closely allied with Russia, with Washington. The Russian Central Bank essentially is something that Washington set up. There are business interests there whose bets are with the West. And so Putin kind of sits between having to manage the Atlanticist integrationists on the one hand and the more hardline people on the other. Now, I do not think the hardline people would ever try to overthrow him. He's too popular. They wouldn't be able to do it. And so what I think will happen is that the hardline people within the government, together with Putin, will prevail over the Atlanticist integrationists, and they'll simply be frozen out and become not even a marginal factor, because this latest Syrian thing is so outrageous. You may have seen that the Russian ambassador to the UN said that in his 40 years of diplomacy, he had never seen such high-handedness or such demagoguery than Washington had just demonstrated. And that he sort of suggested that he did not have any further hope for diplomatic approaches to solving problems with the Americans. So it looks to me like the Putin government can no longer pretend it has a partner in the West with which it can make deals or negotiate settlements. I think any further talk of peace deals with Washington, it's not likely to happen. The Russians have to know by now that they cannot trust Washington, that Washington is not interested in settlements. Washington is interested in prevailing and is determined to throw Assad out.
No matter
the whole
what.
Strategy of the neoconservatives is to use jihadism to destabilize not only Syria, but Iran, and in the habit to go into the Russian Federation and into the Muslim province in China that borders Kazakhstan. So it's Washington's tactic and strategy for dealing with Russia and China.
We're talking to Paul Craig Roberts, folks. Paul is, of course, a former U.S. Assistant Secretary of the Treasury. His website is paulcraigroberts.org. Now, on his website are, well, there's an avalanche, not an avalanche, there's an archive, an avalanche, what's wrong with me? There's an archive of brilliant articles going back several years about geopolitical events, everything relevant to what's happening today. Paul's books are on there as well, The Neoconservative Threat to World Order, How America Was Lost, and The Failure of Laissez-Faire Capitalism. Paul, you published an article over the weekend, maybe it was Friday. I always get an alert when you publish an article, and I read them and I share them around. And it's called Western Media Credibility in Freefall Collapse. Now, what's interesting is you talk about the fact that the Gallup poll shows that 32% of Americans only trust the print and TV media to tell the truth. This is an all-time low, and it's incredible. And of course, it's an indictment, you know, on the idea that we live in a democracy where we are protected against tyranny by the media, by a robust media. We're not, we know that. But there was an interesting couple of facts in the article. One is, you talk about paulcraigroberts.org, which is, I know, is a very, very popular website, and a lot of people read it. And you talk about having the combined readership of many newspapers. And I know this to be true because internet websites are ranked, and I can see how successful your website is. But that despite that, Paul, despite you giving a different side of events and a different take on things to the corporate-controlled lying media, despite the massive readership that you have, funding it is incredibly difficult. And you're kind of alluding in the article to how much of a problem this is. And you actually say, and I quote, if money would flow into where only truth is spoken, more could be done. That, my friend, is at once depressing and exciting, if you understand me. Depressing because you have the, you know, collectively, the independent media has problems with money. But exciting in terms of the readership is up and people are turning more and more to independent, honest media. What do you say?
Well, that's what the I think the Gallup poll shows. The 32% who still think the media tells the truth, that's overall. Now, political independents, only 30% trust the media. Young people, only 26% trust the media. Republicans, only 14% trust the media. So the way you get the 32% is that old people, 38% of them still trust the media because they come from a time when you could sort of trust it. But it's the Democrats. The Democrats are the only group in the United States, a majority of whom still trust the media. According to the poll, 51% of Democrats, American Democrats, trust the media. So, and you can see why, because the Democrats, particularly the older ones, they believe that it was government that saved America from the Great Depression. And since the media today is totally supportive of the government, then that trust in government spills over to the media. So as these older Democrats die off, then the trust rates of Democrats will start falling toward those of Republicans. So how did this happen and why? I don't think it's because people read me or listened to you or read other things and realized the media was lying. I think they've just come to see that. They can see the total one-sidedness. They've heard media figures say, we're doing everything we can to elect Hillary. Well, the media is not supposed to be partisan. It's supposed to try to find out what the actual news are, what the actual story is, and give it to people. It's not supposed to be out there with an agenda. And people see that now. And they've also learned that the government has gotten away with massive lies and criminal actions, and the media is not after them. They realize that, in fact, the media essentially are cheerleaders for the government, cheerleaders for war, cheerleaders for the police state. Just the other day, the Washington Post, which was once a real newspaper, published an article that sort of endorsed the story that Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump were in a conspiracy to poison Hillary Clinton. And they quoted some Nigerian doctor who said that Hillary's illnesses, her obvious illnesses, are due to this conspiracy by Trump and Putin to poison her. Now, when you get that kind of nonsense in the Washington Post, I mean, this is such a low level. This is kind of like the supermarket tabloids, where you see headlines like, I was abducted by space aliens.
Yeah.
So, this sort of thing, I think, has made people realize that the media is not trustworthy and that they can't rely on it for a valid explanation. They know now that Saddam Hussein did not have weapons of mass destruction. They know now that the Libyan thing was a disaster. The latest polls also show that a majority of Americans no longer believe the 9/11 story. They don't know exactly what the truth is, but they don't believe the official story any longer. And so we see the sort of overreach, the propagandistic nature of the entirety of the Western media. Print and TV media. I'm not talking about the internet. and people have caught on. So I think that's the reason the media was not able to prevent Donald Trump from getting the Republican nomination. You know, they went after him, all out after him. And the people just sloughed it off. They didn't pay any attention. They went ahead and voted for him. The same with Bernie Sanders. The media went after Bernie Sanders. In actual fact, Sanders won the Democratic nomination. It was just stolen from him. And so when you see that, you can see that the media has lost its ability to control the explanations and to control the American population or the way it sees things. So that makes it easier for us who try to approach these issues in a realistic and truthful way, because the people no longer trust the print and TV media. Another thing that happened, you see, they got rid of the anchors like Peter Jennings, Dan Rather. In my view, they weren't all that objective. They tended to be more liberal than conservative, but they were known factors. People, they came out of journalism. And now we get all these pretty faces, these pretty blondes. Nobody knows who they are. They don't really have, they're just a face. They don't have any media credibility. They didn't come up as journalists, winning prizes, breaking stories. And so the media organization itself doesn't have the kind of impressive clout. And we also have the problem that Clinton let 6 mega companies buy up 90% of the media.
Which to this day, Paul, and I lived through that. I was working in mainstream commercial radio in the Republic of Ireland, and I saw that happening. It was happening in front of my eyes, and I couldn't believe that nobody was stopping it. Nobody thought it was a bad idea that oligarchs and multi-billionaires could basically buy up the world's media.
Yeah, right. And this guy who bought up the Washington Post, it turns out, that he has a $600 million contract from the CIA to develop cloud research for them. So, you know, clearly somebody with that kind of a contract with the CIA is not going to give you anything unfavorable to the military security complex. So the whole media, I think, has kind of destroyed itself. We also have the German editor, the former editor of the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, Udo Ulfolke, who published that book 2 years ago, which said he himself routinely published stories in his newspaper handed to him by the CIA, and that there was not a significant journalist anywhere in Europe that was not on the CIA's payroll. This book, of course, has not been translated into English.
No, it hasn't been translated into English. And funny enough, we made contact with him, and he was due to come on the program earlier in the year, and then for some reason it didn't happen. And I got the impression that a lot of pressure had been put on him after that book had been published. Paul, we've only got a few minutes. We've got about 2 or 3 minutes left. I want to sincerely again thank you, because I know at this time of the year, particularly in election year, everybody wants a piece of you and they want to talk to you. But I want to ask you one final question, which is, to me, it's really important anyway. One of the times that you spoke with us, you broke away from a birthday party. I think one of your grandkids had a birthday party. Or it might have been your birthday, Paul. And the grandkids might have been coming around to see their granddad. And we were talking about that briefly, and you came on the programme. I look at your career and I look at the things you've achieved in it and the corridors of power that you've walked down and the people you've worked with. And there you are now, retired but not really retired. You're writing your books and writing these articles. When you look at the grandkids, Paul, as you do, lovingly, I would imagine, you love spending time with them, what future do you think they're going to have? Where are we going to go? Where is this all going to end, really? I mean, are we on this kind of slippery slope to doom that we can't really get off of? Or can we do something about it so that when your grandkids, you know, are having their own children, Paul, that we won't be living in this crazy paradigm where gangsters and mass murderers, you know, basically hold the reins of power and do whatever they want. What do you think is going to happen?
Well, it's not sure there's going to be much of a future. All of the good jobs have been given away to Asia, so they don't have the kinds of prospects economically that my generation had. The environment is pretty much damaged, and we don't know the full extent of the damage, but I saw just the other day a famous scientist said that the humans will be extinct in 100 years. It's too late to reverse the damage. And of course, we are now being brought into direct conflict with Russia and China. And if they don't give up and surrender and accept American rule, there's going to be a war. There's not going to be anybody left. So I don't say we have a very optimistic outlook. I'm not even sure young people today even think about having kids, because it's not just the lack of jobs for them to be able to afford kids, but they have no reason to think the jobs would be there for the kids. And we also have now something called Child Protective Services. So if your kid goes to school with a bruise because he fell off his bicycle, or he got bruised up playing football or something, then the teacher has to call the police and report the bruise, and the Child Protective Service has to come investigate the parents to see if they've beat the child. So crazy, these kinds of intrusions into the family, people are not sure they want kids, because you no longer have any privacy. You have no control over your children. In fact, the way it is now, if you have a problem teenager and you're trying to control all, she's got to do is to pick get you off your case, just call Child Protective Services and say, oh, they're beating me. So it's a mess. I don't know. I think the society, Richie, has been really badly hurt. And the whole system is hurt. And whether it can recover, I just have no idea. But, you know, you have to have hope, and that's why I continue to try to tell people what's really going on so that they get some awareness, because if they have no awareness, we can't do anything.
It's a wonderful thing that you do it, Paul, because there aren't very many people like you who've been where you've been, saying the things you're saying. Folks, Paul's latest book, The Neoconservative Threat to World Order, is a terrific read. I recommend it wholeheartedly. Paul's website is paulcraigroberts.org. That's where you'll find the articles. We've tweeted them out there as well. Thanks for your time, my friend. Always love getting your input. And we're thrilled that you give us so much of your time. We'll talk again in the not too distant future. Paul Craig Roberts, thanks as always. The brilliant Paul Craig Roberts on the line to us there from his home in DC. It's exactly 3 minutes past the hour. A rather down in the mouth Paul Craig Roberts at the end there. And that's brilliant, that, because that segues incredibly well into Mark Boyerski, who's standing by on the Costa del Sol, is going to talk to us in a minute. Because Paul Craig Roberts was basically offering an opinion there that I hear a lot from people. And I hear a lot from people who work in the independent media who believe that, well, we'll keep trying to do what we can to try and make our, you know, our own environment a better place. But ultimately, I think we're all screwed. And I hear that a lot of the time. I'm not saying that's exactly what Paul said, but you get where he was going with that. 4 minutes past the hour. It's time for a quick break. You're with the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Welcome back to the programme. It's 5 minutes past the hour. You're with the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com, broadcasting on alternatecurrentradio.com and fabradiointernational.com. Check out ACR and Fab Radio, two brilliant platforms packed with terrific programmes. I mean that sincerely. And when this programme is on, and when any programme is on Alternate Current Radio, they've got a chat room and it's brilliant. Check it out. Now, David Icke is in San Francisco as part of the Worldwide Wake Up Tour this coming Saturday. Go to the worldwidewakeup.com. There are tickets available. Not many. There really aren't many. You can see that when you go to the site. But there are good tickets. It's a wonderful venue. It's intimate. Wherever you will be there, you'll have a great view of the stage, of the screens, and David, and what's going on the day. Amazing stuff. Right. We're going to move swiftly on because Mark Bajerski is standing by on the Costa del Sol. Really interesting questions for him. You've put some very interesting questions for him, but I want to get into with him at the very beginning that sense of hopelessness, not espoused by Paul Craig Roberts, because Paul said that you've got to hope, but this ultimate kind of, well, we might be screwed anyway, no matter what we do. I want to get into that. And I also want to talk about something which is really important to me, and that is, as more and more people are becoming aware of what's happening, because as Paul said, Paul Craig Roberts said, they don't even realise what's going on because they read Paul Craig Roberts or they read David Icke. They're instinctively understanding it anyway without the help of the great researchers. But this is causing them problems. It's causing them difficulty in their private lives, in their family lives and in their professional lives, coming to terms with the horrors of realising what's going on. How do you deal with that? Mark Bajerski joins me in exactly 90 seconds to talk about that on Your Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. Right, music from Carol Emerald on the Richie Allen Show in association with DavidIke.com. It's exactly 8.5 minutes past the hour. This is your show. Thanks for tweeting. It's at Richie Allen Show. Email richie@richieallen.co.uk. Massive amount of tweets came in during Paul Craig Roberts. won't get time to read them because we've already eaten into the time promised to my next guest. Do go to Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, into Twitter, and you'll see what other people have been writing. My next guest is no stranger to you. I'm very, very fond of him. He's a huge, huge supporter of the independent media, and he's been incredibly generous with this programme, donating wonderful healing artefacts and materials for auctions to raise money for the programme. That has nothing to do with him being here, not now, not ever. He's here because I think his work is brilliant. He's an author, he's a psychic, he's an international healer, he's written, amongst other books, Diary of an Accidental Psychic, which we spoke about when he was on the programme the first time. Thrilled to welcome back to the show our friend Mark Byerski, and his website is markbyerski.com. Tweeting that right now. Mark, good evening.
Oh, good evening, Rich. I'm so excited. I have butterflies.
Will you stop? It's great to have you back on the programme. I've just heard from somebody on the Costa del Sol who's thrilled that you're coming on. And they're saying it's a lovely time to be on the Costa del Sol because the temperatures have dropped significantly from mid to late July, August, and it's a little bit cooler while still glorious. And when I hear that sort of thing, I miss it because I spend so much time down there. No, it's terrific to have you back. I'm not going to waste any more time with any of these platitudes. Straight into, I don't know how much or any of what you heard Paul Craig Roberts say to me about where we're going to end up, Mark. Because it's the $64 million question. There are researchers and workers and activists and carers and people who love people and who do things for people because they want to change the paradigm. And they think, why the hell am I doing it? We're finished anyway. There's no stopping this agenda. There's no changing this paradigm. Are we wrong?
Completely. Absolutely 100% wrong. I mean, if you cannot see what's happening in front of our eyes right now, if you cannot feel what's going on at this moment, then that makes me feel very sad because your intuitive energy is obviously not working correctly. And if anybody is out there saying that we are finished, then I am telling you, you haven't sat down and stilled your mind and listened to the truth. This place called Earth is going to be here a long time. And we, as humanity, will be here for a long time. And we will conquer and we will prevail. And it all even sounds like a president speaking, but it's not. I am just a common person representing all my brothers and sisters in this world who get up every morning, feed their children, love them, care for them, go to work, help people on the street, help people who need a helping hand, and who are kind enough to always, always think of others. I am representing these people, and there are more people in this world who are amazing. But you must understand something. We must understand the most important thing that is happening right in front of our eyes, in plain sight. It is hidden to a lot, but it is there if you're able to just stop. And that is, there is a huge manipulation going on at this moment, and it's always been going on. And that is called darkness. And there is always darkness, always. It will never disappear. It will always be there. For that is there to challenge us, to show you, the common man, of how powerful you truly are as a soul, as a beautiful, powerful soul. And you have two choices, because this is free will. And the choices that you have is either you can be on the energy of positivity and belief and trust and faith, or you can be on the energy of fear. The choice is always yours. Nobody can give you that choice. Nobody can take it away from you. Nobody can help you achieve enlightenment. It is just there. And it is up to you as an individual to make that decision, what you choose to do in your life. Now, I wake up every morning, Richie, because I decided one day that the pain, the suffering, the fear was too much for me to carry anymore. And it showed itself in a form of emotional damage, which then turned to physical damage. I had irritable bowel syndrome so bad that I was on medication all the time. I had a corroded back. I am here today to tell everybody, to share this truth, that the suffering and the pain that I went through, there came a point in my life that I looked in my mirror and said enough was enough. And I basically became a warrior for the light, as so many people out there do now. And every morning I wake up now because I conquered my fear. I conquered it. All the things that I went through, all the brainwashing as a child through school, all that I was told through all the people who were in politics, all of these things that brought fear into my life, I turned away and rejected it. I let it go and I started a new life. And since that moment, Richie, and everybody listening, I do not suffer with irritable bowel syndrome. I do not have a corroded back. It's gone.
You left it behind you, Mark. You basically left it behind, didn't you?
It's exactly that. That is exactly what it is.
I hate to interrupt. Can I just ask, is there a practical... I absolutely believe what you're saying because I've seen it. I've seen it in my own life. But I can't articulate it like you because I'm not like you. I know you will say we are, but I don't have your knowledge and your abilities. Can you articulate that in a way where you can put it into two or three or four steps? You know, could you say to somebody, right, start this way, or why don't you do this? Is there a way that, because people listening to this will go, right, this is absolutely fantastic. What do I do though?
Well, I can only explain to you, Richie, that each one of us are divinely individual. There is not one person out there the same as the other. And as I explain to people that as we are born and we are loved, sometimes we are abandoned. Sometimes we have a mother that doesn't quite love us or a father that doesn't quite love us. And then we have everything else that happens through our life and we become the person that we are. And that is very individual. So I cannot say to everybody out there that what I can give you four steps is going to work because, quite frankly, it probably won't. But what I can say to everybody over the 10 years of sitting in front of thousands of people, that there is a common energy that runs through everybody. So put yourself next to me now and just feel what I'm trying to say to you. When I place my hands over yours and I feel your love, your spirit, your essence, everything about you, not your physical, but you as a spirit, as a soul, as a beautiful divine light. I have never, ever once not felt the power within you. Then I come back into the physical and I feel the emotional stress. I feel the cross that you carry. I feel the burden of everybody else's issues, weaknesses. I feel the fear of your thoughts of the future. Now think about that, Richie. When I feel you and I feel your energy as a spirit, it is perfect. It is beautiful. It is amazing. And then I come into your physical body and now you're carrying all this unnecessary, horrible, dark, painful issues. So what does that tell you? It tells you that you're carrying stuff that doesn't belong to you, that you're not meant to carry. So what you have to identify with, first of all, is that what makes you feel bad? And you have to ask yourself, is this me? And I can guarantee you, whoever's listening tonight, it isn't you. It was never you. It was never your spirit, and it was never anything to do with your spirit creating anything, because your spirit is pure and divine and beautiful. So the mind confuses you and tells you that this is your issue. These are your problems. And that is where you need to flick the switch off and tell your mind to shut up, because these problems don't belong to you. They are not yours. They were never yours. The issues and the pains and the burdens and everything that lies on top of your shoulders, in your mind, in your stomach, and the cross that you carry are not yours. So now you know that. What are you going to do? The first thing you're going to do is drop the cross. You are not here to carry that cross. Nobody ever told you to. So once you realize that and you can let that go, then that is the start of your whole life. It is the first day of the rest of your life. In fact, you hadn't even started living. This is your moment. And if you can grasp that, if everybody out there, the common people like me, can grasp that, then we can change this world. And this world is changing. And it is becoming more and more obvious that we need to let go. And the biggest thing that me and you need to do daily is let go of stuff that doesn't belong to us and should never affect us. Now, the issue we have here now that we know it's not ours, what is it? Well, you know, Richie, more than anybody, that the manipulation of all types of governments, of the pharmaceutical industry, the science, the teaching at school, all of these things are geared up to actually attach to you and to make you either fear or be angry. Now, the thing we have now at this moment is that there's a lot of anger going on, and I can see it around. But I actually believe that this anger is helping people recognize that what they should not carry anymore. And there comes a point in everybody's life that they say, you know what? I cannot continue being angry about these things, because I'm going to look back in my life in 20 years and say, what the hell have I held on to? What has that done for my life? And what has it done for my family's life? What has it done for my friends? You will answer, and that will be that it did nothing. It served no purpose. Now, once you realize that, then you can let go of all of that and then start a new path. You can walk a new warrior energy, but not in fear. No, in the opposite. You walk in love. And a warrior can walk in love. And people may laugh now and say, what's he talking about, love? But let me tell you, love is the most powerful force in this world. And it is the only force which will conquer fear. And you have to begin to love yourself. And once you start to love yourself, and this is not ego talking, this is your heart talking. Once you start to love yourself and see that you are a beautiful soul and that you do not need to follow people like Mark Bierske or the gurus or anybody, what you need to do is be your own guru. You need to believe in yourself. You need to believe that you are everything that you came here to be. And once you clear all of that away, then that is what we call the awakening of the soul. And this is what I've been doing for the past 10 years, day in, day out.
It's amazing people. Stuff, Mark, because we talk a lot on the program about how the system itself spends so much time on working on, it spends so much of its energy, negative as it is, on ensuring that we don't know who we are, where we came from really, and what we're really capable of. And we've had some really interesting questions come in around this. Gio contacted us earlier on to say, I'm having a really bad run of bad luck. You know, it goes from bad to worse. Is there anything I can do to help myself get out of it? And on that kind of theme, Tristan tweets, can you ask Mark about getting past emotional heartbreak? And my heart kind of breaks when I read that tweet, to be honest, because that can't be, you know, that can't be easy. It can't be nice to be going through that. Getting out of a rut, whether it's through a run of bad luck or whether it's because somebody whom you loved and imagined you were going to be with forever and ever and ever, and they've decided that they want to move on and leave you behind. What words do you have for Tristan and for Gio? What can they do to change the way they're thinking about these things?
Well, personally, if I was sat with them, it would be a very personal reading, and I would be talking about them, their life, who they are, what they are. But in general terms, if you're asking me that question, it is a difficult question to answer for the mass. But all I can tell you is through my experience. I was once married, and one day my first wife left me after 7 years. And I used to love picking my beautiful little son in my arms when he was no more than 3 months old. And the most beautiful thing for me at that time was coming downstairs at 3 o'clock in the morning and feeding him and falling asleep, his little heart beating against mine and him falling asleep. And then one day my first wife said, I don't want to be with you anymore. I'm leaving. So I remember walking down the stairs with two bags and crying, of course, and my whole life basically ended, as you would understand.
Yeah.
So I found myself in my auction house on my own, and I had some tablets, and I thought to myself, what's the point in living? And I remember taking the tablets and just about putting them in my mouth, and then from nowhere I had this message. And the message was, Mark, what are you doing? Look at your life. Look at yourself. Look at why you're doing this. Look at who you are. Remember who you are. So I burst into tears, and at that very moment, I had this vision of seeing myself doing something that I realized, what on earth am I allowing this? What on earth am I taking these actions for? Is this more important than my life? Is what has just happened more important than my future? Am I here to do this? And I realized at that very moment that I had to be stronger and that I am here for more. And I got up and I looked in my mirror and I looked at myself. And for the first time, I started saying, who are you, Mark? And what have you done? And I started to look at the truth about who I was and what I'd been through and how I was as a husband. And I made a vow that day that I would never, ever be with another woman and not treat her with as much love as I could, as I knew as I could at that moment. The years went by, and like a miracle, this wonderful woman walked into my life. She walked into my life like an earth angel that she is. And every single day, I wake up with so much joy in my heart, having had a child with Susie Bajerske and being loved by her more than anybody in this world. She has stood by me every day when she should have left, but she didn't. And I grew stronger when I moved to this village. And I look at her every day when I wake up and I say to my first wife in my heart, thank you for what you did. Because if it wasn't for what she did, I would have never have been able to have this time with the most amazing soul who lives in my life now, who I love more than anything in this world. Now, I am here to tell you, dear friends, if you are going through pain, I am here to tell you this because I have experienced more pain than you can imagine. But I am here to say that that pain will ease one day and you will meet somebody and you will look back like I do today and say, if it wasn't for what happened, I would have never have been in the arms of this beautiful angel like I am now.
And I can hear the emotion in your voice there, my friend. It's 29, and I love that. I really do. It's 29 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Mark Bajerski. His website is markbajerski.com. I'm going to spell Bajerski. It's B-A-J-E-R-S-K-I. It's a brand new website, singing and dancing website there. You can find out more about Mark, his books, how to contact him for readings, and much more besides. These are seriously important issues. They really are. Learning how to let go of a failure, whether it's a failure in a job or a failure in a relationship or a failure in anything, how to let go of it and how to understand that, you know, it's all part of who you are and where you're going to go and what you're going to do. Wonderful stuff. Thanks for sharing the personal stuff with us, Mark, by the way. I have great admiration for you for doing that. I really do. And that neatly kind of brings us around to, you talk a lot about, you make these videos on Facebook, which are fantastic. They're absolutely watchable videos. You have to see them on Mark's own personal Facebook page. You'll make a video blog or a video diary in the morning, sometimes in the afternoons. And we'll just, almost like a thought for the day. Always interesting, always funny and quirky. And he talks sometimes about understanding what's really going on. Now, if we are at this juncture where more and more people are beginning to become aware of what's really happening, which is ugly, it's beyond ugly, it's tyrannical, there are any number of adjectives we can use to describe it. It doesn't sit well with people when they start to understand this. It hurts them. It affects them very deeply. I know this from personal experience. In my personal life, in my family, I know what it does to people when they start to realise what's going on. It shatters them. This is a huge issue, isn't it? Because not everybody realises what's happening, Mark, and says, great, right, right, so the bastards are doing this, right, let's take them on. A lot of people are devastated by it, aren't they?
Well, Richard, there's different levels of... I suppose the word I could use is old soul. There are people who were born with the incredible insight to see that there was something wrong. And these are the ones that were named rebellious when actually they realized there was something wrong and they didn't want to be encaged or imprisoned. And I was one of those souls, and I was expelled and always down at the head office being whipped. And questioning my religion and all of these things. And as you grow up, you still continue to question and you still continue. Can you imagine me now being a psychic? And still, when I see things going on around me, I always questioning. You know, it's kind of like now my life has been one of just complete questioning everything to the degree that my wife says, oh, no, not again. Can we not have a break? And she's so right. Because sometimes we can get so, so deep into this negativity. And remember, Richard, and remember out there, everybody, if you start getting too deep, you start going down that rabbit hole, what wants you to go down. It is a deliberate pull into the negative. Why do you think mainstream media always put out bad stories? As a child, do you ever remember good stories ever coming out? Maybe one, if you're lucky. Because there's a reason why these negative stories come out. They keep you at what is called a low vibrational energy. And if you resonate at a low vibrational frequency, it is that of fear. Now, what does fear do? It keeps you frozen. It keeps you from taking a leap of faith. But once you clear fear out of your life, there is nothing that can stop you from doing anything that you want. Now, the problem there for the darkness is that they don't want that. They want you to stay frozen, to be dumbed down, not to question, not to think. For God's sake, don't think. If you think, you become dangerous to them. So what we need to do is recognize what we need to fix. And the only way we can fix this world is to start being brave. But I did not say stupid. I said start being brave. Because the difference is, I see people fighting on social media every day now. And that is not the way forward. That only brings the whole of what we're trying to do down. So we have to be stronger than that very energy where people are fighting and bickering with ego or whatever it is, personal vendettas. All of that serves no purpose. However, Richie, that said, it is also very, very interesting because that very energy is showing us what we need to do, how we need to switch off, how we need to throw the TVs out of the window, how we need to get rid of politics, how we need to get rid of the money energy. I do not like money. I have never liked money. I don't like the energy that is attached to money more than the green piece of paper. And what I have seen over these years has broken my heart when it's concerned of money. Money is really, really terrible. And I dream of a day that there is no money, there is no politics, and that we can live in a society as humans, as equals. Now, my dear friend, we are not equal. This society is not equal. We are not born equal. And this is one of the things that we are trying to change. And this is why I always say, do not look up to the guru. Become the guru. Become your strength. Become you. Write your book. Be the power. Be the truth. Be everything that you know in your heart you are and what you can see that can change the world. Because if everybody becomes a guru, that's when the fear and all the darkness and all behind the strings who's pulling all this will then have no power at all. But if we feed fear, then that keeps us at a low vibration. And this is why my message to everybody tonight, and I'll say it again, if you want to change this world and tip the scales towards the light, towards positivity, towards miracles happening in front of our eyes, then you have to be the miracle. You have to start that way. You have to show your children how to be. You have to teach your children to question. You have to talk to people in a way that is positive and not negative. You cannot shout and scream at people. It does not serve any good. It only puts them down in a lower vibration and brings you down to their level. It is time to raise above that very darkness and shine your light and show this world how amazing you are. And if you do that, you will start to change hearts and minds, and people will start to see your light. And I tell you, when that starts, your life becomes amazing. And that's how we change this world.
Folks, keep the tweets coming in. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter, richie@richieallen.co.uk. Mark tweets, Mark Hardy, I'd say play the game, but don't let it affect you. In terms of money, I hate having cash on me. I'm happy when I'm skint. And then he says, ish, says Mark Hardy. I echo what Mark Bajerski says as well, you know, about living in a world without money, living in a world without wage slavery, without that fear. Stevie G tweets, as a former Roman Catholic growing up in Belfast, I was filled with the Holy Spirit the day I read the Bible. No fear now. Gio says, loving listening to Mark Bajerski on the Richie Allen Show. JP says, mere men hide behind religion, myths and masks. Belief is misguided. Mind over matter. Souls speak. Endorsing what Mark is saying there. Velvet Noir tweets, agree with Mark. The darkest of times begin to make sense when you reach the levels of happiness you never thought were possible. Catherine tweets, does Mark agree that we're never given more than we can cope with? That's a deep question, that. We're never given more than we are capable of coping with. What do you think?
Well, the 10 years that I've been working with people, I have never had one person, to my knowledge, that has taken their own life. I have heard of people that have taken their life. So the question would be there, if they took their own life, that must mean that they had to have more than they could have chewed. It was so difficult that they were given too much. So it is a difficult one, Richard. I can't really say one way or another.
Yeah.
And I can't honestly say to people out there to believe what I am saying about this subject, because it is a very, very difficult thing for you to believe when I say that when spirit comes through after they take their life, they are extremely happy, at peace and at home, and they have never felt more joy to be back home. So it is never a mistake in that sense when you're home, but here you leave a devastating impact to all the family that you say goodbye to. And if there is anybody out there who ever, ever has that feeling of taking their life like I did, let me tell you, life becomes beautiful if you get over that energy. If you let that energy go, there is so much to life. There is so much love and so much beautiful magic out there. And that is one of the things I believe a lot of us here come to do, overcome that energy of going home. My son, when he was very young, had a very deep experience. And I always remember him waking up and saying to me, if what I've just felt is what is called the afterlife, I want to go now, Dad. And he said that to me once.
Wow.
And I said to Nico, Nico, you've got too much work to do, son. You're here to prove to yourself that you are an amazing soul. And what you are about to do in your life, you are going to look back one day and be proud of. And now my son is 22 years old. He is the youngest coach in England to have his own gym. And he trains people who are now gold medalists.
Yeah, I've seen him on Facebook. He's amazing, yeah. Wonderful story.
He's never had any help from his dad. I have encouraged him, but never given him anything, because I said to him, Nico, if you can do this yourself, one day you will look back and realize how amazing your life is and what you did. But if I give you everything, then it will never feel the same. And now he realizes what that means. So in itself, my belief about life is that we come here, and if we are a really powerful energy in the spirit world, you just imagine this, that the life after life is so beautiful that we come to this planet, this world, this very special world, to learn, to experience the challenges and the tests that are given to us every day, which is the darkness, the fear, the worry, the pain, the suffering. All of these things are there because we chose many of these lessons. And the reason why we chose them is because we came here to feel and experience and to see how we can cope and what those feelings are and how we can become stronger than those very feelings. Therefore, my belief every day now is that when you come to me and you are in so much pain and suffering, you may be suffering with drinking too much, you may be suffering with a broken heart, you may be suffering losing your love of your life to the spirit world, well, I'm telling you this, you are the strongest soul in the world, and you are more powerful than anything, and you will conquer this, because that choice that is very hard for you to understand now, that I say to you that you chose this, and you will say, no, I didn't. Well, I'll tell you this. One day before you move to the light, you will see what you have done and how you coped with that and how you behaved and how you grew stronger and how you were able to help your brothers and sisters who were going through the very same thing, to be able to look back and say, I lived through that. And the choice is, would you rather not have gone through anything in this life and sat down with a pipe and slippers in a rocking chair and knitting needle and not felt anything in life? Is that what you think we're here for? We are here to experience life and to become stronger than those very issues that are put in front of us daily. And once you can let go of them issues, once you can feel them and let them go, because pain is inevitable, but suffering is optional. So then when you experience it, let it go and allow the love back into your heart and the healing. And that is what life is about. So we all have a story, Richard, all of us. There isn't one person out there who doesn't have a story of pain and suffering. We are all the same. We are all equal in pain and suffering in the way we feel, in the way we feel. So whether we are in Syria, whether we are in Huddersfield, whether we are in the Bahamas, the pain and suffering we feel is the same no matter what that situation is, because pain and suffering is relevant to whatever we feel at that time. So this is the journey, my friend. There is no quick fix. It is a personal journey that we chose to feel, and the feelings are what makes us stronger in the end, Richard. That is my belief.
Mark, this is great stuff. Mark's website is markbajerski.com. Alex Doust has a brilliant question, and it's echoed by Coca Bell. And Coca Bell, I hope you're well, by the way. She's a wonderful woman. She's a singer-songwriter, and she had a terrible leg break a few weeks back. I did a Sunday View, I think, or maybe it was a Friday program, and she tweeted a picture of her in hospital with her leg pinned together. This, this very young woman, and it's a horrible thing to see. Alex tweets about getting over worries about upcoming medical procedures, and then he says that I should know about that. I did have a lot of difficulty going to the dentist recently. I had to really fight with myself to do it. But Cocobell tweets, hospitals are terrifying. She was there with the leg injury, as I said. That's a serious fear, that, isn't it? The fear of, I mean, we could do a whole show on phobias, and I bet you, all the money I have in my pocket, which is not very much right now, as I sit here talking to you, that people have come to you over the years with phobias. Hospitals and medical procedures, getting over your worries and your fears of those things, Mark.
Yeah, that is very common. It's still attached to fear. That's what it is. It's fear-based of the unknown, and that's basically what it's about. I mean, for me, I don't have any issues with hospitals, because if I hurt my tooth and I've got an abscess, I'm straight at the dentist and, taking the antibiotics. I have got no issues with hospitals and with the pharmaceutical drugs that we need. I have got an issue, though, with things that are forced upon us that we don't need and that may be dangerous. So I am quite happy to go to the hospital and the doctor, and there are some amazing doctors, and some of my clients are the most amazing doctors, and the nurses, which are amazing. And the reason, one of the things that I've noticed is a lot of them are leaving because of what's happening in the system, and they don't like what they see. But, these are good people, but they now are starting to wake up and realise that the system is all wrong and it's all geared up as business. But then that said again, if you think about this, Richard, if you break your leg, you're going to go to the hospital, and they're going to be pretty good and they're going to fix it. So we can't keep going into the darkness and blaming everything on the hospitals, and we keep away. What we have to do is become wiser and become stronger than the fears of the hospitals. And what do we do? Somebody's smoking in front of me saying, I don't like hospitals. Yeah, well, why are you smoking? People are drinking in front of me, lots of drinks. I'm drinking every day, Matt. What do I do? Well, you're frightened. You've got a phobia of the hospitals. What do you do? It's kind of in your face. Come on, look, feel for yourself. What's going on? What are you doing? So everybody is kind of like, in a sense, kind of lost in a certain way when it comes to these phobias that I see daily. So you've just got to wake people up, like I was woken up by people, and I didn't realize that I was doing that. I didn't realize what I was doing. Richie, now I look at people, and I said to my wife today, I have a heartbreak now when I see people eating McDonald's. I have a heartbreak when I see people smoking. It breaks my heart, because I want them to be well. I want them to be healthy. I want them to be happy. I just want to say to everybody, eat vegetables, eat good things that are good for your body and keeps you strong. Alkalize the body, drink plenty of water, keep away from Coca-Cola, don't smoke, don't drink too much, find your balance. I really want to say that from the rooftops, but I can't, because I realize that we all have to go through this life, and we are all on different levels of understanding, and we cannot teach Einstein to a child in a day. So we must realize that this is a process. And all we can do is share our information, what we have learned, what we've experienced with people, and hope that they will grasp it. And if they don't grasp it, then maybe one day they will.
Remember, folks, it's markbajerski.com. That's Mark's website there. You can follow him on Facebook as well. He's got a personal page, but he's got a page for him, for what he does, which you'll find just basically put into Facebook, Mark Bajerski. That's Bajerski. It's exactly 11 minutes to the top of the hour. We've got about 3 or 4 more minutes left on this. It's absolutely flown by. Really interesting question came in from Chris. You're not going to get through this in 3 or 4 minutes, but you can have a good go at it anyway. Does Mark believe in reincarnation? Does our spirit ascend to take its place with all the other energies in a kind of a final state, Mark? Or do we go around the merry-go-round again? What's your intuition on that?
My feeling is, like you've said once before, that we all have this... this gift of choice. It is free will. And that free will isn't of the physical, it's of the spiritual. And that free will is, you know, I want to be free. I want to fly. I want to do what I want to do. And this is my life. And this is what your heart cries for. Well, if you're asking me, is there such thing as reincarnation? There is, in my personal opinion, absolutely no doubt in this world on earth that we don't come back. I believe we come back all the time. I believe that I have met people that would blow your mind away. You know, over these 10 years, I have met people who are able to talk about the house that they lived in. I have been with people who have told me what's around the corner and they've never been there before. I have seen children play instruments that have never touched an instrument before, that have started drawing so beautiful, and their mother and father saying, well, I'm not an artist. They've never been taught that, yet they can draw like a pure artist. So you're asking me, have we been here? I think we keep coming back, and I think we keep coming back till we get the point. And that point is whatever we feel, whatever we've been through, if at the end of our life we can say that we felt it, we experienced it, we conquered it, and I no longer need to feel that energy again, then we may choose to come back and learn something completely different. So there are so many aspects of emotions that we come to learn to higher ourselves from the spirit world. And in my belief, this world is just a beautiful learning world. It is one big school of emotion, but there will always be the light and dark. And I believe we keep coming back till the moment we say, do you know what? I don't think I need to go back anymore. So I do believe in reincarnation.
That 45 minutes has flown by. It really has. There are other questions on Twitter, but we'll get into those in the future because we're just about... out on time, or out off time even. You really should go to markbajerski.com, folks. Mark's book, Diary of an Accidental Psychic, it's one of 2 books that he's written, and he sent that to us last year. We've read it, and it's absolutely terrific. It really is. It's very insightful. It's poignant. It's wonderful. It's warm. It's witty. I can't recommend it highly enough. Mate, thanks for doing what you do. Thanks very much for supporting the independent media, not just this programme, but everything else that you do as well. And I look forward to you coming back on the programme in the near future.
Oh, thanks, Richard. And I'd like to thank everybody else who are all your supporters, who are my friends now. Love you all. Love you all. Love you all. You're amazing.
Thanks very much, Mark. Mark Bajerski, folks, go to markbajerski.com. Top man, and terrific to catch up with him again on the programme today. Back after these.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
Do you want to release the full potential of your soul consciousness and find out how to experience that power in all areas of your life now? Go to livingasyoursoul.com for free guidance with in-depth how-to articles, free healing meditations of creation recordings, free soul solutions, and much, much more. Livingasyoursoul.com, making the profound practical.
Welcome back. That's kind of it for the program. I just want to flag up, we've got a really special program tomorrow. All of our guests are special. I certainly don't regard any one guest any higher than any other. Tomorrow is special in that we're going to be talking to a man called John, who went to see David Icke in New Zealand, flew to New Zealand to meet with David, to share his story with him. He then went back to the United States and then flew to Manchester to meet with me, to present me with documentary evidence to justify his inclusion in one of our programs. His story is absolutely amazing. It's a story of state-sponsored murder, of police corruption on an unimaginable scale, of insider trading. I could be here all day. If the guy told you the story, you wouldn't believe it, until you got to meet him and you got to see the evidence that he has at his disposal. David obviously put him in touch with us. And as I said, I met him here in Manchester City Centre a couple of mornings ago. Yesterday, in fact, it was. And he's going to be on this programme exclusively tomorrow, right, to talk about this unbelievable story. And you really don't want to miss that. We'll have audio clips. We'll have everything. You've got to hear it. That's John on this programme tomorrow. And amongst the guests on Thursday, Brian Rothery will be on the programme. Brian is based in Ireland, does a lot of tremendous work with parents fleeing from fleeing their country to avoid having their children wrongfully taken away from them. Unbelievable. So that's tomorrow and Thursday. We'll also have something else on Thursday as well. That's it for the programme. Thank you to Paul Craig Roberts. Great to have Paul on the programme. Mark Bajerski is amazing. Check out markbajerski.com, paulcraigroberts.org. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 8 p.m. BST. I just want to, as always, thank Claire, Aaron and Simon for all their help. They're amazing. They really are. And to you for listening and tweeting, thank you very much. Look after yourselves and one another. Join me tomorrow at 8 p.m. BST for Wednesday's Richie Allen Show. Stay with Alternate Current Radio and Fab Radio International too. They've got great programs coming up now. See you tomorrow. Bye for now. The world.